A Ship Must Die, written by Douglas Riemann and read by David Rintoul.
Chapter 1, Help from On High. The year of 1944 was only 2 weeks old, but already it looked as if it might be one of the hottest on record. The sun, which blazed down across His Majesty's Australian Naval Dockyard at Williamstown, was so fierce that it had stripped the sky of colour, and the crowded berths and wharves twisted and danced in an ever-changing mirage. But it was Sunday, and the working parties about the dockyard were reduced to a minimum, leaving the ships to themselves, overlapping shapes of grey steel or vivid dazzle paint. The main berth was devoid of movement, the gantries motionless like dozing storks, the massive wooden concourse all but covered with a litter of pipes, wire, anchor cable, and debris of all sorts, a scrap dealer's paradise. Ships being refitted, others being constructed to fill the unending gaps left after 4 years of war. Veterans, too, their hulls showing hasty repairs, others still displaying their scars, splinter holes and buckled plates, where weapons and men had once stood and faced their enemies. But it was Sunday. War or not, the urgency could wait. Halfway along the main berth was a cruiser. From her sharp stem to the motionless ensign which dropped from her quarterdeck staff, she seemed to stand apart from the many vessels around her. Despite her 7,000 tons, she had the grace of a destroyer, with her funnels trunked into a single structure to add to her air of power and speed. At the foot of her brow, where a sentry stood almost asleep in a patch of shade, a lifebuoy hung on a small varnished stand with the ship's name, HMS Andromeda, for anyone who cared to read it. She, of any ship in the Royal Navy, was a veteran in the clearest terms. She had steamed thousands of miles from one theatre to another, Norway, Dunkirk, the Atlantic, and finally the Mediterranean. There was no sort of war she had not experienced. Andromeda had become famous, another of the Navy's special legends which nobody could explain. Some ships were happy ones, others brought only trouble, even disaster, to those who served them. Outsiders scoffed at the idea. How could a thing of steel affect people? But those who knew such ships were content to keep the secret to themselves. Now, after 2 years of some of the hardest sea warfare in the Mediterranean, when Andromeda had rarely been absent from the nation's headlines, she had come far south to this dockyard in Victoria, Australia. The Pacific War was spreading in all directions, and with the United States Navy taking the lion's share of the operations, the Australians were in need of more ships to reinforce their scattered fleet and to replace the ones already lying on one seabed or another. Soon now, HMS Andromeda would be paid off to recommission eventually into the Royal Australian Navy, perhaps even with a new name, one more in common with the men who would fill her mess decks and action stations. The cruiser had been at sea for Christmas, an occasion of very mixed emotions, as well as being a far cry from the previous one she had seen. For if Andromeda was special, so too were her people. Now some had already left, to be sent home in the next convoy. Others to work their passage on a newly repaired vessel needed elsewhere. On this sweltering Sunday, all the remaining members of the ship's company not required for duty were ashore. Again, it was an entirely new experience. No air attacks, no bitter cold or freezing nights, just sunshine and a warmth of hospitality which left them breathless. The ship was very still, with just the gentle murmur of fans and a faint throb of a generator deep in her bowels to show a sign of life. Right aft in his day cabin, Andromeda's captain sat alone at his desk, plucking his shirt away from his skin as he sipped at a glass of iced gin and considered his own feelings. Captain Richard Blake was just 33 years old. Earlier in the war, such swift promotions were compared with other, less demanding times, but now they hardly raised a comment. At the outbreak of war, Blake had commanded a destroyer. It was a world he understood and enjoyed, in spite of all the hazards. He had imagined that nothing could ever replace a destroyer in his affection.